This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
DC for you. DC for you. DC for you. DC for you.
Todd, I don't know about you, but I can't think of many things worse than a bad case of swamp ass.
You know, I didn't hear you there, but I'm going to say probably nothing is worse than a bad case of swamp ass.
That is indeed what I said.
That is, boy, thanks for that visual, sir.
Yep, it's bad out there in Louisiana. You know, pretty much every time of year, it's never not muggy. And you know, it's also amazing how the swamps of North Carolina look in no way like the swamps of Louisiana.
Well, I guess I've never been to the swamps of North Carolina or a swamp in general, but so I didn't necessarily
or the swamps.
Spot the differences.
Yeah, I kind of flipped that one. I was like, I should have said the swamps of Louisiana look in no way like the swamps of North Carolina.
So this was filmed, this Swamp Thing pilot, in Louisiana, yes?
No, it was actually filmed.
No, North Carolina, sorry.
Yep, that's where all the big hullabaloo about this DC Universe Swamp Thing series blew up because of some tax rebates that allegedly Warner Brothers was going to get from the North Carolina state government, that or like the city around in which it was filmed, and that didn't really happen so much because that's what this episode is all about. Episode one of DC Universe's Swamp Thing, which turned out to be a pretty expensive show.
Yes, it was very expensive for 10 episodes.
Yeah, it was like $80 million, something like that.
So $8 million per episode, if you think about it that way, which is, boy, that's an awful lot for a streaming service.
That is a lot of money to drop on a series that's, you know, on a streaming service that's still very much in its infancy.
Right.
Like, you don't... It's like your the subscriber numbers, according to DC co-publisher Jim Lee, are very good, and it's thriving. That's cool, but man, this series was being filmed before they had them numbers, so you can kind of see maybe why they were like, this is a pretty pricey show. I don't know if we can keep this going.
So, I mean, what was it? They thought they had more money than they did, so they decided to make it as pretty and expensive as they could because they thought... they were getting so much in taxes, et cetera, or tax credits and
that
incentives.
Well, you know, a leadership change also occurred during the process of making the series. The leadership of AT&T kind of took over.
It's true.
Warner Brothers, and the folks that greenlit, there's a pun, this series probably promised a good bit more money than the new bosses were really comfortable with. So that's my estimation of probably how this all went down. And I think that they probably were willing to give that much money because this series is produced by one of the modern masters of horror himself, James Wan.
James Wan, director of the Aquaman movie that I like very much and did very well. So you would expect that this would be equally successful. I think its quality is pretty darn good, wouldn't you say?
I agree with that. Just watched recently the first episode of the show and was really taken aback by how much I liked it. I wasn't sure if it was necessarily going to be for me as I was going into it, but I was still excited to watch it because it's a Swamp Thing series, a live-action Swamp Thing series, something we haven't had since the 90s. And
right.
You know, your mileage will vary on that 90s series if you ever get a chance to see it. It is not on DC Universe as of this recording, but it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, maybe one day. But this series, though, this kicked off in a big, bad way, setting a tone that I was immediately drawn to. And it's one that I think DC shows and movies often get criticized for being like too dark or gritty. But with a character like Swamp Thing and given the setting and what they're basing the show off of, it fits really well. I couldn't imagine you really doing it successfully any other way.
Yeah, I would say that's accurate. I was hoping for maybe a little bit of even darker tone. I mean, we definitely swing into the mature stuff, much in a show like Hannibal, where you have these tableaus of dead characters positioned artistically because of the swamps and the roots going through them. And that's to me the stuff that really sticks with you. I was hoping it would get even maybe more bloody and violent. And I haven't seen the whole series yet, because after I watched this pilot episode, the day it was debuted, it was canceled the very next day. Word of its cancellation, which is bizarre. Was supposed to be a 12 episode or 12 or 13, and they cut it to 10. And received some very angry tweets from one Virginia Madsen, who is in this character or in this pilot as the wife of the primary antagonist character. Yes. Sunderland.
Yeah. She is, I believe she was also in the Swamp Thing movie that Wes Craven did.
Oh, wow.
I think that, 'cause she has a tie to Swamp Thing that goes beyond this. And it's, yeah, the timing on that was just awful. Just the absolute worst that I could imagine, you know, for a series that, you know, you're still going to put it out there. You spent so much money putting it together, even though you're not going to continue with it. You still want people to at least, you know, spend some time watching it. But then you come out with a story right after that says, oh, well, sorry, kids, this is all you get.
Go ahead.
I could see that turning some people off. I could see that being a reason that some people would say, oh, well, if this is only 10 episodes and it's, you know, not going to have, you know, well, I guess it does have a proper ending or maybe even a rushed ending. I don't know. I haven't gotten there yet. But I could see that turning some people off to the idea of even starting the series because it has no future.
Yep. And it's a real shame because there's some good performances in this. Cinematography is obviously very good. And the basic premise is pretty solid as far as an updated take, perhaps on the early 80s vibe from the Moore Swamp Thing. And that's who this owes a lot to, is the origins of that. You have with Abby Arcane and Matt Cable and Alec Holland. But we do get, even later in the series, an adaptation of the Anatomy Lesson. So I haven't gotten into that yet. Oh, and Jason Woodrue, too. He's in this as well.
Yep, the Floronic Man, as it were. I'm very much looking forward to getting to that because that is, you can tell that this series is pulling real heavy from the Alan Moore Swamp Thing run. So it owes so much of its story to that era. So if you're familiar with the Alan Moore Swamp Thing, I think that you owe it to yourself to try this show out. It was interesting starting this show up because I watched the first episode of this with my girlfriend Elizabeth, and she was not real high on the idea of watching the show to begin with, and wasn't sure if she was going to like it. But by the end of the episode, it was like almost a complete turnaround. She was much more into it than I think she anticipated. She had gotten kind of emotionally attached to one of the main characters, I guess what we would say is the main character, Alec Holland.
Best character, yeah.
Yeah, and of course,
most interesting.
He takes two shotgun blasts to the chest at the end of the first episode and gets blown up real good on a boat. Mm-hmm. Of course, anybody who knows the character of Swamp Thing knows that Alec Holland is himself going to become the elemental superhero who is the title of the show. Although, I believe I think it's Andy Bean that plays him in this first episode. And Yeah, Andy Bean is the guy that plays Alec Holland to begin with. But once the Swamp Thing creature makeup is on, it is no longer Andy Bean. It is an actor yes. named Derek Mears, who is much bigger and...
looks like a pro wrestler or Kane.
Yeah, he's got a little bit of that that Kane-esque thing going on in his facial features, but it is now him in the Swamp Thing makeup, which I got to tell you, man, I was not necessarily expecting them to give us fully realized Swamp Thing at the end of episode one.
Mm-hmm.
But though that makeup job they did was awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It doesn't seem cheap or obvious, you know. It's very well done, practical effects for the most part, I would think. This pilot is very effective, especially for people who might have never read a Swamp Thing comic but have preconceived notions of Swamp Thing. Oh, that's going to be goofy, cheesy schlock horror, right? And this is not. You get attached to the characters and the plot right away. And it's well done. It takes itself very seriously, but still has some funny moments, too. And so I can see why Elizabeth, like my wife, Corey, really got into it and developed an attachment to the characters. And it's pretty shocking that he gets Ned Starked right at the end of this, unless you're a Swamp Thing aficionado or just somebody who's read more than a few comics in the day.
Yeah, the look and tone of it, I think all the performances were good. I didn't find one that I didn't like. And I actually really liked Crystal Reed as yep, Abby Arcane. Abby.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that they're using her as the POV character rather than Alec. Like, it's not so much the Alec Holland story as it is the Abby Arcane story. And... one funny comment, though, that Elizabeth made to me was that she thought Abby seemed like she was barely in her 20s, and yet she's like this high-up doctor in the
PhD,
CDC. in the CDC, and they're sending her in to investigate this stuff in the swamp. So that seems a little like, really? Like, we might be stretching, you know, or we might be suspending our disbelief a little high up there. But... that aside, I thought her performance was really good. I thought that some of the stuff that they developed with her and Virginia Madsen's character, mm-hmm. who was...
Abby's dark secret past.
Yeah, like the dark secret past of Abby Arcane, like coming to light, or like slowly coming to light as the series goes forward, I mm-hmm. thought was a really great element to add to this story to make it have some more depth, you know? So those are some of the things that worked. Was there anything in the first episode that didn't work for you?
I'm going to say there really wasn't anything that made me go, I don't like this or I don't agree with this choice. I think it's very smart, very well done, using mostly likable people. I guess I can get behind this character is far too young to have achieved so much and to be willing to come back to this place that still haunts her. They definitely set the scene pretty well, even though it may not be authentic to a Louisiana bayou. You can still get a little bit of that True Blood vibe when they go to her friend's bar and there's so much in the rain here that I guess I can buy it, but it's not quite the dense dark swamp that you would necessarily see in Louisiana bayou. But again, that's I don't have that much experience with that, so I wouldn't be able to say. So I don't have many problems with this whatsoever.
That was kind of leading into my next question is, do you think it captured enough of the comics to make like comic fans happy? To make the people
that's
who are maybe
question.
like seriously into Swamp Thing comics, or they love that Alan Moore stuff, and maybe even the Scott Snyder stuff, and beyond. Do you think that this is capturing enough of that comic story and tone to satisfy like comic book readers?
Yeah, that to me is a good question, or a difficult question or challenging question. I think so much of our affection for early Swamp Thing is how groundbreaking and revolutionary it was, and all the places he went with it, literal places, you know, going to Swamp Thing going all over the world via the Green and doing different things. And to me, the best Swamp Thing tales, he's not necessarily the protagonist. It's an Abby story, kind of the horror between Abby and her uncle's character and her husband. And that in Swamp Thing, the comic, she's married, and that's a big part of her story. And here she's not. But as a comic reader, I would say, well, I guess I would like to see maybe more of a direct adaptation instead of an update. But then I don't necessarily feel like it would be best because I don't think it would be as successful as hooking up in a mass audience.
I agree with all of that. I think that it does change some things from the comics. Some major things like Abby's marriage does not exist. The romance angle is there, but it's different from what we saw in the comics. And
Abby in the comics has never met Alec Holland. Human Alec Holland.
That's right. She's only ever known him as Swamp Thing.
Yes.
But in this television show, she meets Alec Holland in kind of a meet cute way, as the kids say, but it's also kind of creepy because Alec Holland comes off as a little bit creepy to begin with. Andy Bean the plays very first that scene. Way.
Yeah,
it's like he's a little bit strange, but he grows on you, you know, like a bad mold as the series goes forward, or as this episode goes forward anyway. I think that was probably the most shocking thing to me was that, oh, God, is this the last we see of Andy Bean? He was actually pretty good at this. You know, another character who kind of came out of nowhere for me, I didn't realize he was in the series, was Will Patton playing Avery Sunderland. I was like, oh, my God, it's that dude from, I think, Gone in 60 Seconds.
Yeah. Well, I think of him as the coach. What's the movie I'm thinking?
Was it Friday?
Not Remember the Titans. It's the racially balanced one. I have to think about it for a second.
It is Remember the Titans.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the coach from that.
He was in that. He was in Armageddon and The Punisher. I believe the 2004 Punisher that's the one he was in. So it's really cool to see him pop up here. He does this, he's playing a prominent businessman in Marius, Louisiana, where this show takes place, who, while publicly giving back to the community, is he's kind of determined to, you know, take the powers of the swamp, or harness the power of the swamp for profits in the pharmaceutical area. That's his whole deal.
Yeah, he's kind of the boss hog of the town in his own way.
Certainly a boss hog role would be a good way to say it, but he's more likable, I think.
He's putting himself out as the savior of the town, or the benefactor of the town, and whereas he's really got sinister motives involved.
He's kind of the unofficial mayor of the town, really. Like, he's not an elected official, but he might as well be, because there's a scene in episode one when the town doesn't seem to want to listen to the actual mayor at all. They are just having none of this stuff because there's what seems to be a plague spreading within the town. Like, kids are getting sick. People are, straight up dying from this horrible disease that nobody can identify. And Patton's character is the only one who seems to be able to calm people down. They'll listen to him, but the mayor is just, you know, struggling. So that's kind of that's also the backbone of this first episode, and I think it is going to wind up being the backbone of the series itself. Abby came back to town to investigate this budding epidemic that nobody can identify, and apparently it's going to, I think what they're hinting at is that it ties back to what Sunderland is doing in the swamp.
Yes.
And Alec Holland himself is also there investigating this very same thing. And He's doing it from the botanist side of things. He's very much
right. This is something plants. Nobody's ever seen before. Mm-hmm. He's looking to see the what on earth is going on here, and he's kind of a fish out of water.
Very much so. He's wearing sandals walking around the swamps of Louisiana. I'm like, you don't do that, man.
No.
You can tell he's not from around here. Yeah. He's walking out in the swamps of Louisiana in like shorts and sandals. And I'm like, are you insane? They don't have mosquitoes and snakes where you come from?
Yeah. Nope. So, paying no mind to that. Yeah. Not just flip flops, designer flip flops.
Good God, they were designer flip flops, weren't they?
They were. Yeah, he looked like he got lost from Bourbon Street, like his Uber driver took him somewhere wrong.
He showed up for a bachelor party. He wound up investigating plants in the swamp. He just kept walking down Bourbon Street thinking, oh, I'll just see what's all the way at the other end of it.
Let's see. Did you know that Tuvok is in this? I don't know if you're a Star Trek guy, but Tuvok was in this as well.
I did not.
He's one of the doctors investigating at the very beginning when we meet Alec. So he has a couple speaking roles, and every time we go back to the hospital, there he is. Tuvok from Voyager.
Oh, wow. Lots of little connections to other like geek media going throughout this series. Because Kevin Durand plays the Floronic Man, and
Woodrow, yeah.
Of course, he was famously
Blob
in X-Men Origins Wolverine. So there you go.
What else is he? He was on Lost. He's done other stuff too. But he's always going to be Blob to me. Unfortunately,
yeah. Unfortunately for him. That's fortunate for us. Like we're all very funny, Logan.
Yeah. I hope he brought his boxing gloves.
Oh God. Oh, that's fortunately, I don't think he blows up to be like five times his regular size for this show. I haven't quite got to his main episodes, like the main arc for him in the series. Mm-hmm. But after watching this first episode, I think Elizabeth and I both had the same feelings on it. We want to watch more of this. It was
absolutely
intriguing enough to make you want to keep going. What did you think about some grosser aspects of the show? Because that was one of the things that the show very much advertised in its trailers that it was going for. They were like, well, this is not necessarily going to be for the squeamish at times.
Right.
And in fact, one scene in this episode, in this first episode, when they've got a dead body in the morgue.
Autopsy.
And the autopsy scene and the plants come out from inside this dude, like his intestines have turned into spreading roots that pull the body apart, yet still use part of it almost in a puppet-like way, which is kind of freaky.
It is extremely effective. And I will say that, you know, I was talking earlier how it reminded me a bit of Hannibal, but with living things, not just this beautiful crime scene that you would see in Hannibal, the TV series by Brian Fuller. But this was with this living tissue coming out of the dead body who's making this disgusting face. It's extremely effective. Probably the best scene in the show to me was done extremely well. Even the part where they find the body in general has this. I would say that if you can't handle that, there's probably going to be more of that coming up. So just be careful. But that's what this is. It makes it a true horror pick for our show.
Absolutely. This show does have those really like scary elements going on with it, because before there's even a swamp thing going on at all,
jump scares,
the swamp does seem to be a living thing that defends itself against intruders. And one poor bastard finds himself in the opening scene of episode one, finds himself impaled on a tree that just grows out of the swamp in rapid succession. And it's pretty graphic. I was like, they're not pulling punches with this show. Like, they set the tone very early on. They're like, we want you to understand that this gonna get gross at times. And if you're not in for that, then this might not be the show for you. But even though they do that, I still felt like the show's primary focus is on character. Like it is very much a character drama, and that's what they want you to spend most of your time focused on. And the like grosser side of the show is more of a feature than like the main point, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, you definitely have a interesting story with a corporate villain type thing and a mysterious substance, not entirely unlike what we have in Cloak and Dagger, if you've seen that series.
Absolutely love that show.
But with the feature of the unique swamp effects, I guess I'll call it the swamp aspect, the living green aspect. But the stars of the show, or the reasons people are going to get hooked, are because the characters are well done, multi-dimensional, and likable for the most part, when they're supposed to be likable. And even Virginia Madsen's character, Mrs. Sunderland, is not necessarily just a pure shrew. She has a reason to be upset at Abby coming back to town. So each of the characters is fully drawn.
It has another thing that Elizabeth called out on this show was that she said it has kind of a Stranger Things vibe to it. Just in the way that some of the characters are presented, in the way that you have these multiple story arcs going on at once, and how it's got that horror aspect to it, but it also gives you like just the strong like connections to your lead characters. And in that, yeah, I can see it. I mean, not to say that it has like young like kid characters that you focus in on. It doesn't do that. But after she said that, I kind of was like, yeah, it does have a little bit of a slight Stranger Things twist to it. Not so much a like full vibe, but I can kind of see it now.
I can see some similarities in the way the villain type entities and bigger picture, plus the having an otherworldly force involved, and certainly some of the way they're using those effects. I can see that. Plus in the characterizations, you get these people who you would want to watch a show about in general without this fantastic story around them too. You're still drawn to the characters, moreover.
Oh, very much so. And well, I hope that we've given people enough of a reason to go and check this show out. I mean, it sounds like, you know, you and I are both very high on it. We like we've seen so far, but let's give them some comic recommendations too. I don't want to leave people without some good comics to go and check out if they like this show. Where would you send them first?
As far as comic wise, yeah, on the DCU app, find the Saga of the Swamp Thing, find some other crossover appearances, and Justice League Dark would be a good place. And there's many great Swamp Thing stories down the road, but you should start with the beginnings, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would also say try out the Scott Snyder run on Swamp Thing. It's a great introduction to the character, and was actually the very first Swamp Thing comics I ever read. And that really got me into the character, made me more of a fan, and made me want to go and check out more of what this character was all about. But I can say now, having read a bit of the Alan Moore Swamp Thing, that's really where the best stuff is. So with that, I think we've got some pretty good recommendations there for you. We're going to give this one the seal of approval. Swamp Thing on DC Universe is a really good show. Everybody should go check that out. Maybe if it gets enough attention, Warner Brothers might reconsider full out canceling the show. Maybe it can get a second life if it gets enough like positive attention. Critics loved it. The audiences that have seen it have liked it. So let's hope it can find a way to be resurrected. But with that, that's going to bring this month's horror comics theme to a close. As next week, we're going to be coming back with another current events. We're going to be taking a look at all the stuff that's been happening in the month of October with DC Comics and the news, the best comics that we've been reading, And, of course, October is that month with a fifth week. So we will have a break week for this. But, hey, maybe there's a new episode of Web Has Issues coming.
We will see.
Yeah, that could be a thing. That needs to be a thing. Because if you guys didn't listen to it before, go back and listen to that episode on the House of X, the Powers of Ten, which was a really good comeback for old Weber Has Issues. Very happy to hear that has found life as a podcast, Todd. So with that, we will see you next time.
DC for you.
DC for you.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content, offering tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture.